Hello, this is Tobe, and today is Groundhog Day, probably my favorite calendar holiday all year long, because, as you know, I'm a huge fan of marmots. I go mot spotting all the time, and groundhogs are marmots. So, where do you think I am? Am I sitting in here doing a radio show? Nope, I'm out spotting mots, which is what you should be doing too, but you're not. So, while I'm out spotting mots, you listen to this.
Groundhog, oh groundhog, what makes your back so brown? I've been digging in the dirt so darn long, trying to make my home in the ground, Lord, digging my hole in the ground. Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. We're gonna hunt for the old groundhog. Old groundhog. Well, I'm gonna take you on a groundhog hunt. We're gonna hunt up some groundhog legends and some groundhog lore, some groundhog natural history, and I'm gonna tell you about a special gift I received from an old groundhog hunter. But first, a little spiritual advice. If you want to get to heaven, I'll tell you what to do. Just grease yourself with groundhog stew. When the devil come to get you with his right hand, you can slide on over to the promised land. I have a place over in Yancey County, North Carolina. It's in a holler, a steep little valley between two mountains. There's a little creek that runs down through the middle. The creek's name is Sang Branch, named for all the ginseng that's been found around there. Well, I built a little cabin up there on the side of the mountain, and there's four or five houses in that holler there along Sang Branch. Most of them, homes of traditional folks that have been born and raised there. And I have really enjoyed getting to know my neighbors. You know, there is such wisdom among these folks. I always found if you can get them started by asking the right questions, you can learn so much and you'll hear some great stories too. One day I looked out my window and I see my neighbor Lige, an elderly white-haired gentleman with bib overalls, and he's coming up the trail to my cabin. Well, my lawn wasn't exactly a lawn by that time of the year. It was mid-September and it was about waist high. And I could see Lige was kind of leaning to one side like he was carrying something, but I couldn't see what he had because the weeds were so tall. And to get to the cabin, it's kind of perched up on the edge of the hill. You have to come around the back. So I went to meet him at the back door and I said, "Well, Lige, what brings you here?" He said, "Doug, I brung you something. Something you been a-wanting, buddy." He flopped a dead groundhog on my doormat. "You've been saying you've been wanting one of these, Doug, so I brung you this one. He's been raiding my garden the whole summer before I got that rascal. Now, you said you was wanting a groundhog, didn't you?" I was thinking, I was wanting a dead groundhog? And then I remembered how I'd been up there a week or two before. And as usual, I was full of questions. I'd been asking about the old days, how folks would get along, what people used to eat, and things like that. And he was saying, "Oh, yeah, buddy. Sometimes it was tough around here. Sometimes a chunk of cornbread and a few greens from the garden and some water is about all you'd have to eat all day. A lot of times we didn't have much meat, particularly in the summer. Well, sometimes somebody'd shoot him a groundhog, and we'd cook it up. And boy, when that thing come out of the oven, everybody'd crowd around to get him a bite of that groundhog." And his wife was saying, "Oh, yeah, them groundhogs, they're good eating, Doug. Oh, yeah, they're mighty fine. And I guess I must have remarked about how good it sounded and how I'd like to try that sometime. See, I thought I might get invited to dinner." Well, it looked like dinner had just come to me. "Well, thank you, Lars. That's so thoughtful of you to bring this one to me." He said, "Well, I just knew you was a wanting one, boy, and he's a fat one, too. He's been in my corn patch all summer, buddy. He's corn fed." Now, I've skinned and cleaned a few animals before, but of course, I'm not going to learn anything if I don't ask any questions. So I was just trying to be the empty vessel. You can learn so much more by asking questions than by telling what you know. So I just said, "Lige, is there anything I need to know about how to fix this feller?" He goes, "Well, there ain't nothing much to it, Doug. You just skin him, clean him like you would anything else. Now, up under them front legs and them armpits, there's these little scent glands. They're like little kernels, and you just cut them little glands out, and it'll keep the meat from tasting so gamey." Well, you might think you have gamey pits, but let me tell you, a groundhog has got you beat. Well, I said, thanks, Lodge. I'll do that. I'll watch for those glands. And so I was getting ready to figure out a place on the back porch where I was going to hang up the groundhog so I could skin it. And Lodge said, now you be sure you save that hide. I said, save the hide? What would I do with the groundhog hide? Now, you know, groundhogs, they hibernate in the winter, so they don't really have to put on a thick fur coat like a mink or a fox. I mean, they've got hair, but it's sort of sparse, grizzled-looking, and it's coarse. Definitely not what you'd call a soft, luxuriant fur. I said, Lodge, what would I do with a groundhog hide? He said, son, there's a thousand and one things you can do with a groundhog hide. I said, like what? He said, well, now, say you's making you a banjo, buddy. Say you want to make one of them old-timey homemade fretless banjos. Well, you need to have you a banjo head. You need to stretch a hide over that rim to make the head. Well, you get you a young groundhog hide, and you stretch it over the rim of that banjo. For the head, it'll make the prettiest music. That banjo about play itself. There's nothing sweeter sounding than an old-timey banjo with a fresh young groundhog hide for a head, buddy. It's the sweetest music they ever was. Well, I allowed as how I didn't really have any banjos under construction. Did he have any other ideas? He said, well, now make you some shoestrings, buddy. I said, shoestrings? He said, yes, sir. It'll make the best shoestrings you ever have tied. He says, now in the old days, you know, we couldn't just go out and buy shoestrings and stuff like that. We had to make what stuff we had. And when we needed shoestrings, what we'd do is we'd just get us a groundhog hide and we'd tan it. And we'd make shoestrings out of that hide. Boy, they're strong. You can't hardly break them. Groundhog hide makes the best shoestrings you ever have tied. Well, I said, well, how would I do that? He said, well, first you have to tan the hide. Well, how do I do that, Lodge? How do I tan a hide? He said, well, what you do is you got to get that hide and you get it all fleshed and scraped clean and you lay it in a dish pan or a bucket and you put some water in there and some wood ashes and you make you a slurry and let it sit there for about a week. Every couple of days, you check on it and you pull some of them hairs. Well, after a week or so, them hairs will start to slip off. Well, you take that hide and you rinse it off and you scrape all them hairs off and then you have to work that hide till it's tanned. Well, how do you work it? He says, well, you just work it over the back of a chair or something like that. You stretch and pull. You just keep that thing moving and stretching the whole time, from the time it's wet till the time it's dry. You do that right, buddy, and you have you a tanned hide. Well, I got intrigued. I thought, man, I'm going to have to try that. I got to thinking, my high-top hiking boots? Wouldn't that be great to have groundhog hide shoelaces on those boots? Oh, man, that'd be great. Well, I got to thinking, though, those shoelaces, they're about 4 or 5 feet long. I said, Lodge, how am I going to get a 4 or 5 foot shoelace out of a 1 foot groundhog hide? He says, you cut it in a spiral. You can make it long as you want that way. I said, oh, all right. Well, thanks, Lodge. I'm going to have to try that. So Lodge was getting ready to leave, and he said, now you be sure you render out that grease. He says, that's one fat groundhog. Like I told you, he's corn fed. Now you render out that grease. Groundhog grease? What would I do with groundhog grease, Lodge? He said, son, there's a thousand and one things you can do with groundhog grease. Like what? I said. He says, you make medicine out of it. I said, medicine? He said, yeah, buddy, it makes good medicine. We use it for the children when they get the croup. I've took many a spoonful of that coming up. Now, I've had things that tasted better, buddy, but it'll help you. Lodge, how do I render out the grease? He says, about like you would lard. Well, Lodge, how do you render out lard? He said, son, how can I tell you anything if you don't know nothing to start with? Well, I said, well, like bacon grease or something like that? He says, yeah, you just take it like you had a piece of bacon. You put it on low heat in the frying pan. You just render it out. You just keep it on there, and that grease will cook out, and then you just pour it off. So when I cleaned that groundhog and I skinned him, he had big rolls of yellow fat. And I just cut that yellow fat out, and I put it in the frying pan, and I rendered it out. I came up with a pint of oil. And it was as clear as store-bought cooking oil. So now I had this pint of oil. Now, what am I going to do with all this groundhog grease? Well, I tasted a little bit of it. It tasted about like groundhog grease. I was wondering, now, what am I going to do with all this grease? So I had these baby food jars, and I poured some in each of the jars, and I closed them up. And then I went around to my neighbors, and I said, you know, Lodge killed a groundhog up there, and I rendered out the grease. I didn't know if you'd be wanting any. And people would say, yeah, have you got some? We were just running out of it. And so this gift greased the way, so to speak, for me to ask more neighbors more questions about how you use the stuff. Well, I'd hand over a jar and I'd say, like, what are you going to do with it? Well, not only the old timers, but people younger than me, like this one woman who had a couple of kids. She says, oh, yeah, when the children get sick with the cough or chest cold, you know that Vicks Vapor Rub stuff? I said, yeah. She says, well, you know how you rub it on the kid's chest? I said, yeah. And she said, well, it don't work very well unless it's cut half and half with groundhog grease. That makes it penetrate better. And boy, you cut that Vicks with the groundhog grease, and it'll really help them youngins. And one old guy was telling me, he says, buddy, when the arthritis and the rheumatism gets in my knees, I drink me some of that river yellow root tea, and I lay the groundhog grease to my knees. But it works in them joints. It's like a penetrating oil. Gets them joints a-working. When I was talking to another old friend of mine, he was telling me, now, I don't take a lot of baths in the wintertime when it's cold, but if I'm going to be out in the cold, dragging in the wood, or going out hunting or something, and it's really cold, he says, what I do the night before is I get the wood stove stoked up, and I lay the wood to it till that thing is just a roaring and a kicking off the heat, and I get me a washtub right there beside that stove, and I take me a bath. I stand there right there by that stove, and I just turn around till I'm pink as a newborn baby, and then I lay the groundhog grease to me. Yes, sir, buddy, I just slather it on. And yes, sir, the next morning when I get up, my clothes slide on smooth as silk. I can stay out in that weather all day. I don't get cold. My skin don't get chapped. Oh, man, it's the best. I said, it's like a skin conditioner? He says, yeah, buddy, that's what it's like. It's like the best thing ever. Well, you know, I was talking to a woman I know who's a physician, and she works at a small rural clinic in the mountains. Well, she'd gotten some kind of a flu or some kind of bad cough, and she was hacking away, and she'd taken all her medications, and it was still lingering on. And about the second week, she was still in there in the clinic hacking away. She's the doctor, right? And finally, a couple of nurses who were local women from that area took her aside and said, honey, this cough has gone on long enough now. You need you some real medicine. And they handed her a little jar. Here's some groundhog grease, honey. Now you take this. So you can see it's still a part of the culture. Nowadays, there's all these modern wonder drugs available, but there's a lot of folks that know that when all else fails, a groundhog is something you can count on. Here comes Sally with a snicker and a grin. Here comes Sally with a snicker and a grin. Got groundhog grease all over her chin. Oh, groundhog. I did work up that high, and I made some shoelaces that I still use. I have them on my dress shoes. Now, I don't reckon I could be much more dressed up than that now, could I? So I took that groundhog and I parboiled him like Lige told me, and I boiled it with some spicewood twigs and some juniper berries for flavor. Then I laid him on a grill over some hot hickory charcoal, and I'll tell you, I put a little barbecue sauce on it, and that was about the best eating meat I ever had. You know, I thought about it. What do groundhogs eat? They eat nothing but fresh, green, tender things with a few nuts and berries, and they're like a concentration of all that's fresh and green and sweet and ripe and succulent. That's why groundhog meat tastes so good. You may think I'm getting sort of romantic about this critter, particularly if you've been trying to raise a garden in groundhog country, and those fresh, green, sweet, and tender things the groundhog is so fond of happens to be what you're trying to raise in your garden. Well, that'll ruin a romantic attitude in no time. Those little varmints will go through your garden row by row. They'll eat every little cabbage, broccoli, collard, every little squash, everything. They'll eat the berries off the berry bushes. They'll take bites out of the tomatoes. And sometime, they don't even stop at the garden. I had a friend who pitched her teepee out in the National Forest in West Virginia, and she would park her car at the trailhead, and she'd walk a mile or two into her teepee. She had spent most of the summer out there, and she was having a great time. But I guess what happened is that the winter before, road salt had splashed up under her car, and somehow a groundhog that was living near the trailhead got a taste for the salty flavor and started gnawing the water lines of her car. And she went to town one day, and by the time she got to town, she'd done like $300 or $400 worth of damage to her car engine, because the water had leaked out. And she finally got the car fixed, but she didn't have any other place to park her car. And that salt-craving groundhog was still on the loose. So when she came back from town that day, after she got her car fixed, she bought a roll of chicken wire from the hardware store. She claimed she had to fence her car to protect it from that groundhog. Now when she told me this, I thought maybe she was stretching it a little bit, but she pulled out a snapshot. There it was. She would lay the wire out on the ground, then drive her car onto it and fold the wire up around her car. I could see it in the photo. It was a Volkswagen Rabbit. She called it a rabbit in a cage. So here's an animal that many of us think as a notorious pestiferous varmint. But viewed in the traditional context, this varmint is transformed from a no-good pest, from a bane to a blessing. Among traditional folks, the groundhog becomes a source of food, clothing, well, shoestrings anyway, medicine, and music. The groundhog can feed and nurture and nourish us, entertain us, and heal us in body and spirit. We'll eat that meat and we'll save the hide. We'll eat that meat and we'll save the hide. Makes the best shoestrings that you ever have tied. Oh, groundhog. One day I got to thinking about all this and I was looking at the calendar and I couldn't help but notice February 2nd, Groundhog Day. I mean, I went all over that calendar. There's no Possum Day, there's no Squirrel Day, no Coon Day. There's only Groundhog Day. Now, what in the world is Groundhog Day all about? Well, I found out it's about a lot more than groundhogs. It turns out that February 2nd marks the halfway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. It's known as a cross-quarter day. This is an ancient pagan celebration time known as the Festival of the Return of the Light. It's a celebration of rebirth and renewal. Now, I guess we should really define our terms here. You know, pagans get a lot of bad press these days. The word pagan. Well, I went to the dictionary and I looked up pagan. One of the definitions said an irreligious person, a heathen. Well, the next definition said someone who is not a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew. And I thought, wow, if you're not a member of one of the three monotheistic desert religions, you're automatically a pagan. Well, what a definition. What an interpretation. I thought, let's get back to the real root of this word. And so I kind of got into the etymology. I found out that our word pagan comes from the Latin word paganus. Now, paganus meant simply a country person, a peasant, a villager, someone from the outlying districts. When this word came into use, it was during the rise of the Roman Empire. During this time, the whole Western world was experiencing a radical reconstruction. You know, we were getting hierarchy, structure, organization, cities were forming, and people were living in much larger, more complicated societies. And they had an emperor who ruled over them from above with laws and decrees and governors and police and soldiers. And people's spirituality tends to reflect the society they live in. So as the culture in the cities became more hierarchical, so did people's religions, with bishops and priests and an extensive clergy telling people about worshiping one God up above. Now, out in the countryside, however, out in the pagus, things hadn't changed much. The pagan folks, they were still out there planting their crops, tending their herds, hunting and gathering in the forests. Things hadn't changed much. Their spirituality tended to reflect the earth and its cycles, because that was the core of their lives. There was no negativity associated with any of these beliefs and practices. There was just urban folks and pagan folks. And the word heathen originally just meant of the heath, and the heath is the term for the wild country in the British Isles. Pagan people all over the world, at least in the northern temperate parts of the world, would notice that the beginning of February is often the coldest time. Often the coldest weather we get is in the end of January and the beginning of February. But even though it's the heart of the cold weather, you can't help but notice the days are getting longer. The light is coming back. And with the light will come the warmth, and with the warmth will come the growth, and the world will be born anew. The seeds aren't quite germinating, but the fire of life, that essential spark, is there. Well, it turns out that February 2nd is also 40 days after Christmas. Now, you know, the Virgin Mary was a nice Jewish girl. She was a devout follower of the laws of Moses. And as it turns out that according to ancient Jewish tradition, a woman, when she bears her child, is supposed to stay home and spend 40 days in rest and recovery. And then after this 40-day period, the first thing she's to do is to take her child to the temple and present the child. And she makes an offering to acknowledge that this is a child of God. And with this offering, the child is redeemed from God into the care of the mother. So, of course, this is what Mary did 40 days after Jesus was born. And now among many Christians, February 2nd is a holy day, known as the Day of the Presentation of the Lord in the Temple. And, of course, Christians see Jesus as the light of the world. And that's a direct throwback to the old festival of the return of the light. In the old days, most people would save all the drippings from the candles that they burned all during that long winter darkness, because tallow and wax were very precious. And they would take the candle stubs and all the drippings, and on February 2nd, they would remelt the wax and they would make the candles anew. It celebrates the light coming back to the world. And in many churches to this day, this holiday is still known as Candlemas. Hallelujah! The light is returning to our world. Early February is the time when you want to check all your supplies. See what you got. Check your stored food. How are your canned goods holding out? Still got meat in the smokehouse? How's things in the root cellar doing? It's time to check your wood pile. Do you still have half your firewood? Check the hay in the barn. How's your bird seed holding out? Because February 2nd is considered the halfway point of the cold weather. And if you still got half your food and supplies left in the beginning of February, you should have enough to last till spring. February 2nd, Candlemas Day, half the grain and half the hay, half the winter is passed away, we'll eat our supper by the light of day. Ah, yes, the light is returning. Now that explains a lot. But still, what about Mr. Groundhog coming out of the ground and predicting the spring? I've heard it all my life. Yes, and you've probably heard it too. Mr. Groundhog comes out of his den on February 2nd. If it's a cold, miserable, blustery, overcast, or sleeting, or rainy day, Mr. Groundhog stays out and spring arrives, right? And now if it's a beautiful day and the sky is blue and the birds are singing and the sun is shining, Mr. Groundhog comes out of the ground, sees his shadow, gets scared, dives back in the ground, and we get 6 more weeks of winter. I mean, I've heard that all my life and it never made any sense to me. Not until I started researching this groundhog business. Well, it turns out that this is a throwback to ancient pagan bear and badger cults from Europe. Now, these people didn't so much worship the bears and badgers as much as they watched them. They watched these hibernating animals go into the ground in the fall of the year, and they didn't come out. It was like as if they died. The next spring, however, there they were. They'd come out of the ground when the world was being born anew. It was like they were born anew. It was a great miracle. And in the case of the mama bear, she has her babies during her winter dormancy. And so when she emerges in the spring, she comes out with new cubs. And so it really is a time of rebirth. These ancient ones realized that the life cycle of these hibernating animals was a great metaphor for the human spiritual journey. And you know, as we walk through this world, our shadow is always with us. Face it, we have all got a shadow. We all have our dark side, and that shadow follows us. It is with us for all the days we walk this earth. And when we die and they put us in the ground, and when that hibernating animal goes into the ground in the fall of the year, that shadow disappears. That shadow, the symbol of the soul, is set free, and the animal sleeps the sleep of death deep down. It becomes part of the underworld, one with the earth. Early in the spring of the year, as that time of rebirth and renewal approaches, the animal comes out of the ground, it emerges from the underworld, and if that shadow, some of that old shadow, the old soul is still attached, the process isn't complete. So the animal must go back down, return, and continue sleeping that sleep of death until it's ready to be reborn completely anew. And that's why we say, if Mr. Groundhog saw his shadow, we are going to get 6 more weeks of winter. We'll dig down and we'll dig deep. We'll dig down and we'll dig deep. We're gonna find that whistle pig where he sleeps. Oh, groundhog. Well, you know, as a naturalist or a biologist, I keep thinking, what is any self-respecting groundhog doing out in February anyhow? Groundhogs want to eat greens, tender young things. You know, February, that's the middle of the winter, the heart of the cold weather. Usually anything tender and green is going to be frozen stiff in most places, and a lot of times under snow and ice. You wouldn't think there'd be much out there to interest a groundhog. Well, in the southern mountains where I live, we don't get a lot of snow. But when we do get snow, it usually comes around the end of January or early February. Well, I love to go out after a good snowstorm. Usually I let it set on the ground for one night, and the next day I go out. I love to follow the animal tracks. In the summertime, you see a deer or a fox. You get a fleeting glimpse of this animal as it leaps away, and that's all. In the wintertime, though, if there's a good track in snow, you may never actually lay eyes on the animal, but you can be with that animal for hours. You can see everything that animal did. You can follow along, see where it fed. You can see its interactions with the environment. If it's a predator, you can see where it caught its prey. You can see where it peed. I mean, you can tell just about everything that animal did. You can sort of be with that animal and begin to understand its life, what it was doing, where it was going. To me, that's such a revealing time, such a great time to be out in the woods. Tracks are like stories. You can just follow along and they'll lead you off through thickets and mire and mountains and deserts on classic mythic journeys, journeys into the great narrative of life. Well, it was early February and we'd had a good hearty snow. I'd gotten up early in the morning and went up on the mountain. I had followed deer tracks and I could see where they had bedded down and where they had browsed in the thickets. And then I got onto the trail of a bobcat. It's like you hardly ever get to see a bobcat, but I felt like I got to see that bobcat through its tracks as they wound through the rhododendron thickets. I saw a place where it laid and rested up under the edge of this rock cliff. I could see where it lay there looking out over the thicket, and I found a little tuft of its fur there stuck to the ice. I smelled it, and that little tuft still had a faint, wild feline smell. Wow, essence of bobcat. Well, I wandered all over that mountain that day, and as I was heading back down, I see this set of tracks going across the trail. I looked, and they had little fingers on them. Look, a coon, huh? Well, I hadn't followed a coon in quite a while, and sure enough, it was heading for a creek. That made sense. You know, coons love to work along the creeks, turn over rocks, find crawfish and salamanders and minnows. So I started following those tracks, and they went right to the creek. But then there had been no disturbance in the creek at all. The track just went right across and went up the other side of the mountain. And there was a vine hanging down there right beside the tracks. And on that vine, I see a bite mark. I looked at that bite mark, and it was a cut, like as if a knife had hit it. That was no coon that would leave teeth marks like that. This had to be a rodent with sharp cutting teeth. I looked at that track again, and I could count only four toes on the front paws. A coon has five. A groundhog has four. This was a groundhog. What was a groundhog doing out wallowing around in the snow? Well, I was going to find out. It hadn't eaten the bark off that vine, just went, sort of bit it as it walked by. And so I followed along, and it went on around the mountain, and it came to a hole, a groundhog hole. And there was a bunch of footprints all around the entrance. I could see where it went in, and I could see from its muddy footprints where it came out, tracking mud from the inside of that hole across the snow. You could see those tracks heading around the mountain again. Well, I got right on his trail again and I followed. Found another hole. The tracks went into another hole, finally came back out. I could see the muddy footprints in the snow again. It went into another hole and I kept following. And another hole. It went in and out of seven different holes by the time I got tired of following this groundhog. Well, I couldn't figure it out. I never saw any sign where it ate anything. Well, I went back and was talking to some of my neighbors. And I said, now what was that groundhog doing out this time of year? And my old buddy Theron says, son, don't you know what he was doing? This was a mating season. That was an old boar groundhog. See, buddy, he's out hunting him a mate. Well, he wasn't looking for anything deep. He was looking for love in all the right places. And, of course, I couldn't tell what went on inside each of those dens because the tracks don't tell you everything.
And I'm Tobe. You've been listening to the Dubious Goals Committee Groundhog Day Special, starring Doug Elliott, and not much of me, because we're already out of time, so I'm gonna bolt. Dubious Goals Committee airs every day at 19:30. Be sure to check it out. I'm out of here. So bye, 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 bye.
We would make gusta 4 cuatros of your most bueno jamos, por favor.